to leap from one deck to the other and so cross the Blackwater. Hundreds of Stannis Baratheon's boldest were doing just that. Tyrion saw one great fool of a knight trying to ride across, urging a terrified horse over gunwales and oars, across tilting decks slick with blood and crackling with green fire. "We made them a bloody bridge," he thought in dismay. Parts of the bridge were sinking, and other parts were afire, and the whole thing was creaking and shifting and like to burst asunder at any moment. But that did not seem to stop them. "Those are brave men," he told Sir Balin in admiration. "Let's go kill them." He led them through the guttering fires and the soot and ash of the riverfront, pounding down a long stone quay with his own men and Sir Balin's behind him. Sir Mandan fell in with them, his shield a ragged ruin. Smoke and cinders swirled through the air, and the foe broke before their charge, throwing themselves back into the water, knocking over other men as they fought to climb up. The foot of the bridge was a half-sunken enemy galley with Dragonsbane painted on her prow, her bottom ripped out by one of the sunken hulks Tyrion had placed between the quays. A spearman, wearing the red crab badge of House Celtigar, drove the point of his weapon up through the chest of Balon Swan's horse before he could dismount, spilling the knight from the saddle. Tyrion hacked at the man's head as he flashed by, but by then it was too late to rein up. His stallion leapt from the end of the quay and over a splintered gunwale, landing with a splash and a scream in ankle-deep water. Tyrion's axe went spinning, followed by Tyrion himself, and the deck rose up to give him a wet smack. Madness followed. His horse had broken a leg and was screaming horribly. Somehow he managed to draw his dagger and slit the poor creature's throat. The blood gushed out in a scarlet fountain, drenching his arms and chest. He found his feet again and lurched to the rail, and then he was fighting, staggering, and splashing across crooked decks awash with water. Men came at him. Some he killed, some he wounded, and some went away. But always there were more. He lost his knife and gained a broken spear. He could not have said how. He clutched it and stabbed, shrieking curses. Men ran from him, and he ran after them, clambering over the rail to the next ship and then the next. His two white shadows were always with him, Balon Swan and Mandan Moore, beautiful in their pale plate. Surrounded by a circle of Valyrian spearmen, they fought back to back. They made battle as graceful as a dance. His own killing was a clumsy thing. He stabbed one man in the kidney when his back was turned, and grabbed another by the leg and upended him into the river. Arrows hissed past his head and clattered off his armor. One lodged between his shoulder and breastplate. He never felt it. A naked man fell from the sky and landed on the deck, body bursting like a melon dropped from a tower. His blood spattered through the slit in Tyrion's helm. Stones began to plummet down, crashing through the decks and turning men to pulp, until a whole bridge gave a shudder and twisted violently underfoot, knocking him sideways. Suddenly, the river was pouring into his helm. He ripped it off and crawled along the listing deck until the water was only neck-deep. A groaning filled the air, like the death cries of some enormous beast. "The ship," he had time to think, "the ship's about to tear loose." The broken galleys were ripping apart, the bridge breaking apart. No sooner had he come to that realization than he heard a sudden crack, loud as thunder. The deck lurched beneath him, and he slid back down into the water. The list was so steep, he had to climb back up, hauling himself along a snapped line inch by bloody inch. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw the hulk they'd been tangled with drifting downstream with the current, spinning slowly as men leapt over her side. Some wore Stannis's flaming heart, some Joffrey's stag and lion, some other badges, but it seemed to make no matter. Fires were burning upstream and down. On one side of him was a raging battle, a great confusion of bright banners waving above a sea of struggling men, shield walls forming and breaking, mounted knights cutting through the press, dust and mud and blood and smoke. On the other side, The Red Keep loomed high on its hill, spitting fire. They were on the wrong sides, though. For a moment, Tyrion thought he was going mad, that Stannis and the castle had traded places. How could Stannis cross to the north bank? Belatedly, he realized that the deck was turning, and somehow he had gotten spun about, so the castle and battle had changed sides. Battle? What battle? If Stannis hasn't crossed, who is he fighting? Tyrion was too tired to make sense of it. His shoulder ached horribly, and when he reached up to rub it, he saw the arrow and remembered. I have to get off this ship. Downstream was nothing but a wall of fire, and if the wreck broke loose, the current would take him right into it. Someone was calling his name faintly through the din of battle. Tyrion tried to shout back, "Here! Here! I'm here! Help me!" His voice sounded so thin he could scarcely hear himself. He pulled himself up the slanting deck and grabbed for the rail. The hull slammed into the next galley over and rebounded so violently he was almost knocked into the water. Where had all his strength gone? It was all he could do to hang on. "My lord, take my head! My lord Tyrion!" There on the deck of the next ship, across a widening gulf of black water, stood Sir Mandon Moore, a hand extended. Yellow and green fire shone against the white of his armour, and his lobstered gauntlet was sticky with blood, but Tyrion reached for it all the same, wishing his arms were longer. It was only at the very last, as their fingers brushed across the gap, that something niggled at him. Sir Mandon was holding out his left hand. Why? Was that why he reeled backward? Or did he see the sword after all? He would never know. The point slashed just beneath his eyes, and he felt its cold, hard touch, and then a blaze of pain. His head spun around as if he'd been slapped. The shock of the cold water was a second slap more jolting than the first. He flailed for something to grab onto, knowing that once he went down, he was not like to come back up. Somehow his hand found the splintered end of a broken oar. Clutching it tight as a desperate lover, he shinned up foot by foot. His eyes were full of water, his mouth was full of blood, and his head throbbed horribly. "Gods give me strength to reach the deck." There was nothing else, only the oar, the water, the deck. Finally, he rolled over the side and lay breathless and exhausted, flat on his back. Balls of green and orange flame crackled overhead, leaving streaks between the stars. He had a moment to think how pretty it was before Sir Mandon blocked out the view. The knight was a white steel shadow, his eyes shining darkly behind his helm. Tyrion had no more strength than a rag doll. Sir Mandon put the point of his sword to the hollow of his throat and curled both hands around the hilt. And suddenly he lurched to the left, staggering into the rail. Wood split, and Sir Mandon Moore vanished with a shout and a splash. An instant later, the hulls came slamming together again so hard the deck seemed to jump. Then someone was kneeling over him. "Jamie?" he croaked, almost choking on the blood that filled his mouth. Who else would save him, if not his brother?
"Be still, my lord. You're hurt bad."
A boy's voice. That makes no sense, thought Tyrion.
It sounded almost like Pod. Jamie. "The king is dead," they told him, never knowing that Joffrey was his son as well as his sovereign.
"The imp opened his throat with a dagger," a costermonger declared at the roadside inn where they spent the night. "He drank his blood from a big gold chalice."
The man did not recognize the bearded one-handed knight with a big bat on his shield, no more than any of them. So he said things he might otherwise have swallowed, had he known who was listening.
"It was poison did the deed," the innkeep insisted. "The boy's face turned black as a plum."
"May the father judge him justly," murmured a septon.
The dwarf's wife did the murder with him, swore an archer in Lord Rowan's livery. Afterwards, she vanished from the hall in a puff of brimstone, and a ghostly direwolf was seen prowling the Red Keep, blood dripping from its jaws.
Jamie sat silent through it all, letting the words wash over him, a horn of ale forgotten in his one good hand.
Joffrey, my blood, my firstborn, my son.
He tried to bring the boy's face to mind, but his features kept turning into Cersei's.
She will be in mourning, her hair in disarray, and her eyes red from crying. Her mouth trembling, she tries to speak. She will cry again when she sees me, though she'll fight the tears.
His sister seldom wept but when she was with him. She could not stand for others to think her weak. Only to her twin did she show her wounds.
She will look to me for comfort and revenge.
They rode hard the next day at Jamie's insistence. His son was dead, and his sister needed him. When he saw the city before him, its watchtowers dark against the gathering dusk, Jamie Lannister cantered up to Steelshanks Walton behind Naege with a peace banner.
"What's that awful stink?"
the Northman complained.
"Death,"
thought Jamie, but he said, "Smoke, sweat and shit. King's Landing, in short. If you have a good nose, you can smell the treachery, too. You've never smelt a city before.
I smelt White Arbor. It never stank like this."
White Arbor is to King's Landing as my brother Tyrion is to Sir Gregor Clegane. Naege led them up a low hill, the seven-tailed peace banner lifting and turning in the wind, the polished seven-pointed star shining bright upon its staff. He would see Cersei soon, and Tyrion, and their father.
Could my brother truly have killed the boy?
Jaime found that hard to believe. He was curiously calm. Men were supposed to go mad with grief when their children died, he knew. They were supposed to tear their hair out by the roots, to curse the gods and swear red vengeance. So why was it that he felt so little? The boy lived and died, believing Robert Baratheon his sire. Jaime had seen him born, that was true, though more for Cersei than the child. But he had never held him. How would it look, his sister warned him, when the women finally left them? Bad enough Joff looks like you, without you mooning over him. Jamie yielded with hardly a fight. The boy had been a squalling pink thing who demanded too much of Cersei's time, Cersei's love, and Cersei's breasts. Robert was welcome to him.
And now he's dead.
He pictured Joff lying still and cold, with a face black from poison, and still felt nothing. Perhaps he was the monster they claimed. If the father above came down to offer him back his son or his hand, Jamie knew which he would choose. He had a second son, after all, and seed enough for many more.
If Cersei wants another child, I'll give her one, and this time I'll hold him, and the others take those who do not like it.
Robert was rotting in his grave, and Jamie was sick of lies. He turned abruptly and galloped back to find Brienne.
Gods know why I bother. She is the least companionable creature I've ever had the misfortune to meet.
The wench rode well behind, and a few feet off to the side, as if to proclaim that she was no part of them. They had found men's garb for her along the way, a tunic here, a mantle there, a pair of breeches, and a cowl cloak, even an old iron breastplate. She looked more comfortable dressed as a man, but nothing would ever make her look handsome,
nor happy.
Once out of Harrenhal, her usual pig-head stubbornness had soon reasserted itself.
"I want my arms and armor back,"
she had insisted.
"Oh, by all means, let us have you back in steel," Jamie replied. "A helm especially. We'll all be happier if you keep your mouth shut and your visor down."
That much Brienne could do, but her sullen silences soon began to fray his good humour almost as much as Kyburn's endless attempts to be ingratiating. I never thought I would find myself missing the company of Cleos Frey, God's help me. He was beginning to wish he had left her for the bear after all. King's Landing, Jamie announced when he found her. Our journey's done, my lady. You've kept your vow and delivered me to King's Landing. All but a few fingers and a hand. Brian's eyes were listless. That was only half my vow. I told Lady Catelyn I would bring her back her daughters, or Sansa at the least. And now... She never met Robb Stark, yet her grief for him runs deeper than mine for Joff. Or perhaps it was Lady Catelyn she mourned. They had been at Brindlewood when they had had that news, from a red-faced tub of a knight named Sir Bertram Beesbury, whose arms were three beehives on a field striped black and yellow. A troop of Lord Piper's men had passed through Brindlewood only yesterday, Beesbury told them, rushing to King's Landing beneath a peace banner of their own.
With the young wolf dead, Piper saw no point to fighting on. His son is captive at the Two Twins.
Brian gaped like a cow about to choke on her cud. So it fell to Jamie to draw out the tale of the Red Wedding. Every great lord has unruly bannermen who envy him his place, he told her afterward. My father had the Rains and Tarbex. The Tyrells have the Florence. Huster Tully had Walder Frey. Only strength keeps such men in their place. The moment they smell weakness. During the Age of Heroes, the Boltons used to flay the Starks and wear their skins as cloaks. She looked so miserable that Jamie almost found himself wanting to comfort her. Since that day, Brian had been like one half-dead. Even calling her wench failed to provoke any response. The strength is gone from her. The woman had dropped a rock on Robin Rieger, battled a bear with a tawny sword, bitten off Vargo Hoat's ear, and fought Jamie to exhaustion. But she was broken now. Done. "I'll speak to my father about returning you to Tarth, if it please you," he told her. "Or if you would rather stay, I could perchance find some place for you at court." "As a lady companion to the Queen," she said dully. Jamie remembered the sight of her in that pink satin gown and tried not to imagine what his sister might say of such a companion. "Perhaps a post with the city watch."
"I will not serve with oath-breakers and murderers."
"Then why did you ever bother putting on a sword?" he might have said, but he bit back the words. "As you will, Brian." One-handed, he wheeled his horse about and left her. The gate of the guards was open when they reached it, but 24 wains were lined up along the roadside loaded with casks of cider, barrels of apples, bales of hay, and some of the biggest pumpkins Jamie had ever seen. Almost every wagon had its guards, men-at-arms wearing the badges of small lordlings, sellswords in mail and boiled leather, sometimes only a pink-cheeked farmer's son clutching a homemade spear with a far-hardened point. Jamie smiled at them all as he trotted past. At the gate, the gold cloaks were collecting coin from each driver before waving the wagons through.
"What's this?"
Steelshanks demanded.
"I've got to pay for the right to sell inside the city by command of the King's Hand and the Master of Coin."
Jamie looked up at the long line of wains, carts, and laden horses.
"Yet they still line up to pay?" "There's good coin to be made here now the fighting's done," the miller in the nearest wagon told them cheerfully. "It's the Lannisters hold the city now, old Lord Tywin of the Rock. They say he shits silver."
"Gold," Jamie corrected dryly, "and Littlefinger minced the stuff from Golden Rod, I vow."
"The imp as Master of Coin now," said the captain of the gate, "or was, till they arrested him for murdering the king."
The man looked the Northman over suspiciously. "Who are you lot?"
"Lord Bolton's men, come to see the King's Hand."
The captain glanced at Nage with his peace banner.
"Come to bend the knee, you mean? You're not the first. Go straight up to the castle and see you make no trouble."
He waved them through and turned back to the wagons. If King's Landing mourned its dead boy King, Jamie would never have known it. On the street of Seeds, a begging brother in threadbare robes was praying loudly for Joffrey's soul, but the passers-by paid him no more heed than they would a loose shutter banging in the wind. Elsewhere milled the usual crowds, gold cloaks in their black mail, baker's boys selling tarts and breads and hot pies, whores leaning out of windows with their bodices half unlaced, gutters redolent of night soil. They passed five men trying to drag a dead horse from the mouth of an alley, and elsewhere a juggler spinning knives through the air to delight a throng of drunken Tyrell soldiers and small children. Riding down familiar streets with 200 Northmen, a chainless maester, and an ugly freak of a woman at his side, Jamie found he scarcely drew a second look. He did not know whether he ought to be amused or annoyed. "They do not know me," he said to Steelshanks as they rode through Cobbler Square. "Your face is changed, and your arms as well," the Northman said, "and they have a new Kingslayer now." The gates to the Red Keep were open, but a dozen gold cloaks armed with pikes barred the way. They lowered their points as Steelshanks came trotting up, but Jamie recognized the White Knight commanding them. "Sir Merrin." Sir Merrin Trant's droopy eyes went wide. "Sir Jamie? How nice to be remembered. Move these men aside." It had been a long time since anyone had leapt to obey him quite so fast. Jamie had forgotten how well he liked it. They found two more Kingsguard in the outer ward, two who had not worn white cloaks when Jamie last served here. "How like Cersei to name me Lord Commander, and then choose my colleagues without consulting me?" "Someone has given me two new brothers, I see," he said as he dismounted. "We have that honour, sir." The Knight of Flowers shone so fine and pure in his white scales and silk that Jamie felt a tattered and tawdry thing by contrast. Jamie turned to Merrin Trant. "Sir, you have been remiss in teaching our new brothers their duties." "What duties?" said Merrin Trant defensively. "Keeping the king alive. How many monarchs have you lost since I left the city?" "Two, is it?" Then Sir Balin saw the stump. "Oh, your hand!" Jamie made himself smile. "I fight with my left now. It makes for more of a contest. Where will I find my lord father?"
"In the cellar, with Lord Tyrell and Prince Oberon."
"Mace Tyrell and the Red Viper breaking bread together? Strange and stranger.
Is the queen with them as well?"
"No, my lord," Sir Balin said. "You'll find her in the sept, praying over King Joff."
"You?" The last of the Northmen had dismounted, Jamie saw, and now Loras Tyrell had seen Brienne. "Sir Loras." She stood stupidly, holding her bridle. Loras Tyrell strode toward her.
"Why?" he said. "You will tell me why. He treated you kindly, gave you a rainbow cloak. Why would you kill him?"
"I never did. I would have died for him."
"You will?"
Sir Loras drew his longsword.
"It was not me."
"Eamon Kye swore it was, with his dying breath.
He was outside the tent. He never saw."
"There was no one in the tent but you and Lady Stark. Do you claim that old woman could cut through hardened steel?"
"There was a shadow. I know how mad it sounds, but I was helping Renly into his armour, and the candles blew out, and there was blood everywhere. It was Stannis, Lady Catelyn said. His shadow. I had no part in it, on my honour."
"You have no honour. Draw your sword. I won't have it said that I slew you while your hand was empty."
Jamie stepped between them.
"Put the sword away, sir."
Sir Loras edged around him.
"Are you craven as well as a killer, Brienne? Is that why you ran, with his blood in your hands? Draw your sword, woman."
"Best hope she doesn't."
Jamie blocked his path again.
"Or it's like to be your corpse we carry out. The wench is as strong as Gregor Clegane, though not so pretty."
"This is no concern of yours."
Sir Loras shoved him aside. Jamie grabbed the boy with his good hand and yanked him around.
"I am the Lord Commander of the King's Guard, you arrogant pup. Your commander, so long as you wear that white cloak. Now sheathe your bloody sword, or I'll take it from you and shove it up some place even Renly never found."
The boy hesitated half a heartbeat, long enough for Sir Balin Swan to say,
"Do as the Lord Commander says, Loras."
Some of the gold cloaks drew their steel then, and that made some Dreadfort men do the same.
"Splendid," thought Jamie. "No sooner do I climb down off my horse than we have a bloodbath in the yard."
Sir Loras Tyrell slammed his sword back into its sheath.
"That wasn't so difficult, was it?"
"I want her arrested," Sir Loras pointed. "Lady Bryene, I charge you with the murder of Lord Renly Baratheon."
"For what it's worth," said Jamie, "the wench does have honour, more than I've seen from you. And it may even be she's telling it true. I'll grant you she's not what you call clever, but even my horse could come up with a better lie, if it was a lie she meant to tell. As you insist, however. Sir Balin, escort Lady Bryene to a tower cell and hold her there under guard, and find some suitable quarters for Steelshanks and his men, until such time as my father can see them."
"Yes, my lord."
Bryene's big blue eyes were full of hurt as Balon Swan and a dozen gold cloaks led her away.
"You ought to be blowing me kisses, wench," he wanted to tell her. Why must they misunderstand every bloody thing he did? "Ares. It all grows from Ares."
Jamie turned his back on the wench and strode across the yard. Another knight in white armour was guarding the doors of the royal sept, a tall man with a black beard, broad shoulders, and a hooked nose. When he saw Jamie, he gave a sour smile and said,
"And where do you think you're going?"
"Into the sept." Jamie lifted his stump to point.
"That one right there. I mean to see the queen." "Her grace is in mourning, and why would she be wanting to see the likes of you?"
"Because I'm a lover and the father of a murdered son," he wanted to say.
"Who in seven hells are you?" "A knight of the King's Guard, and you'd best learn some respect, cripple, or I'd have that other hand and leave you to suck up your porridge of a morning."
"I am the Queen's brother, sir." The White Knight thought that funny.
"Escaped, have you? And grown a bit as well, my lord."
"Her other brother, dolt, and the Lord Commander of the King's Guard. Now stand aside, or you'll wish you had." The dolt took a long look this time.
"Is it Sir Jamie?"
He straightened.
"Oh, my pardon, my lord, I did not know you. I have the honour to be Sir Osmond Kettleblack."
"Where's the honour in that?"
"I want some time alone with my sister. See that no one else enters the sepsa. If we're disturbed, I'll have your bloody head."
"Aye, sir, as you say."
Sir Osmond opened the door. Cersei was kneeling before the altar of the mother. Joffrey's bier had been laid out beneath the stranger who led the newly dead to the other world. The smell of incense hung heavy in the air, and 100 candles burned, sending up 100 prayers. Joff's like to need every one of them, too. His sister looked over her shoulder.
"Who?"
she said, then.
"Jamie?"
She rose, her eyes brimming with tears.
"Is it truly you?"
She did not come to him, however.
"She has never come to me," he thought. "She has always waited, letting me come to her. She gives, but I must ask."
"You should have come sooner," she murmured, when he took her in his arms.
"Why couldn't you have come sooner? To keep him safe. My boy."
"Our boy."
"I came as fast as I could." He broke from the embrace and stepped back a pace. "It's war out there, sister."
"You look so thin. And your hair, your golden hair."
"The hair will grow back."
Jamie lifted his stump. "She needs to see."
"This won't."
Her eyes went wide. The Starks? No. This was Vargo Holt's work. The name meant nothing to her. Who? The Goat of Harrenhal, for a little while. Cersei turned to gaze at Joffrey's bier. They had dressed the dead king in gilded armour, eerily similar to Jaime's own. The visor of the helm was closed, but the candles reflected softly off the gold, so the boy shimmered bright and brave in death. The candlelight woke fires in the rubies that decorated the bodice of Cersei's morning dress as well. Her hair fell to her shoulders, undressed and unkempt. He killed him, Jaime, just as he'd warned me. One day, when I thought myself safe and happy, he would turn my joy to ashes in my mouth, he said. Tyrion said that? Jaime had not wanted to believe it. Kinslaying was worse than kingslaying in the eyes of gods and men. He knew the boy was mine. I loved Tyrion. I was good to him. Well, but for that one time. But the imp did not know the truth of that. Or did he? Why would he kill Joff? For a whore. She clutched his good hand and held it tight in hers. He told me he was going to do it. Joff knew. As he was dying, he pointed at his murderer, at our twisted little monster of a brother. She kissed Jaime's fingers. You'll kill him for me, won't you? You'll avenge our son. Jaime pulled away. He is still my brother. He shoved his stump at her face, in case she failed to see it. And I am in no fit state to be killing anyone. You have another hand, don't you? I'm not asking you to best the hound in battle. Tyrion is a dwarf locked in a cell. The guards would stand aside for you. The thought turned his stomach. I must know more of this, of how it happened. You shall, Cersei promised. There's to be a trial. When you hear all he did, you'll want him dead as much as I do. She touched his face. I was lost without you, Jaime. I was afraid the Starks would send me your head. I could not have borne that. She kissed him, a light kiss, the merest brush of her lips on his, but he could feel her tremble as he slid his arms around her. I'm not whole without you. There was no tenderness in the kiss he returned to her, only hunger. Her mouth opened for his tongue. No, she said weakly, when his lips moved down her neck. Not here. The Septons. The others can take the Septons. He kissed her again, kissed her silent, kissed her until she moaned. Then he knocked the candles aside and lifted her up onto the mother's altar, pushing up her skirts and the silken shift beneath. She pounded on his chest with feeble fists, murmuring about the risk, the danger, about their father, about the Septons, about the wrath of gods. He never heard her. He undid his breeches and climbed up and pushed her bare white legs apart. One hand slid up her thigh and underneath her small clothes. When he tore them away, he saw that her moon's blood was on her, but it made no difference. Hurry, she was whispering now. Quickly, quickly now. Do it now. Do me now. Jaime, Jaime, Jaime. Her hands helped guide him. Yes, Cersei said as he thrust. My brother, sweet brother, yes, like that, yes, I have you. You're home now, you're home now, you're home. She kissed his ear and stroked his short, bristly hair. Jaime lost himself in her flesh. He could feel Cersei's heart beating in time with his own and the wetness of blood and seed where they were joined. But no sooner were they done than the queen said, Let me up. If we are discovered like this... Reluctantly, he rolled away and helped her off the altar. The pale marble was smeared with blood. Jaime wiped it clean with his sleeve, then bent to pick up the candles he had knocked over. Fortunately, they had all gone out when they fell. If the sept had caught fire, I might never have noticed. This was folly. Cersei pulled her gown straight. With father in the castle, Jaime, we must be careful. I'm sick of being careful.
the Targaryens wed brother to sister, why shouldn't we do the same? Marry me, Cersei. Stand up before the realm and say it's me you want. We'll have our own wedding feast and make another son in place of Joffrey. She drew back. That's not funny. Did you hear me chuckling? Did you leave your wits at Riverrun? Her voice had an edge to it. Tommen's throne derives from Robert, you know that. He'll have Casterly Rock. Isn't that enough? Let father sit the throne. All I want is you. He made to touch her cheek. Old habits die hard, and it was his right arm he lifted. Cersei recoiled from his stump. Don't talk like this. You're scaring me, Jaime. Don't be stupid. One wrong word, and you'll cost us everything. What did they do to you? They cut off my hand. No, it's more. You're changed. She backed off a step. We'll talk later, on the morrow. I have Sansa Stark's maids in a tower cell. I need to question them. You should go to father. I crossed 1,000 leagues to come to you, and lost the best part of me along the way. Don't tell me to leave. Leave me, she repeated, turning away. Jaime laced up his breeches and did as she commanded. Weary as he was, he could not seek a bed. By now his lord father knew that he was back in the city. The Tower of the Hand was guarded by Lannister household guards, who knew him at once. The guards are good to give you back to us, sir, one said as he held the door. The guards had no part in it. Catelyn Stark gave me back, her and the Lord of the Dreadfort. He climbed the stairs and pushed into the solar unannounced, to find his father sitting by the fire. Lord Tywin was alone, for which Jaime was thankful. He had no desire to flaunt his maimed hand for Mace Tyrell or the Red Viper just now, much less the two of them together.
"Jaime," Lord Tywin said, as if they'd last seen each other at breakfast, "Lord Bolton led me to expect you earlier. I had hoped you'd be here for the wedding."
"I was delayed." Jaime closed the door softly. "My sister outdid herself, I'm told. 77 courses and a regicide. Never a wedding like it. How long have you known I was free?"
"The eunuch told me a few days after your escape. I sent the men into the Riverlands to look for you. Gregor Clegane, Samuel Spicer, the brothers Plum. Varys put out the word as well, but quietly. We agreed that the fewer people who knew you were free, the fewer would be hunting you."
"Did Varys mention this?" He moved closer to the fire to let his father see. Lord Tywin pushed himself out of his chair, breath hissing between his teeth.
"Who did this? If Lady Catelyn thinks—"
"Lady Catelyn held a sword to my throat and made me swear to return her daughters. This was your goat's work, Vargo Hote, the Lord of Harrenhal." Lord Tywin looked away, disgusted.
"No longer. Sir Gregor's taken the castle. The sellswords deserted their erstwhile captain almost to a man, and some of Lady Wendt's old people opened a postern gate. Clegane found Hote sitting alone in the Hall of 100 Hearths, half mad with pain and fever from a wound that festered. He is here, I'm told."
Jaime had to laugh. Too sweet, his ear. He could scarcely wait to tell Brienne, though the wench wouldn't find it half so funny as he did. "Is he dead yet?"
"Soon. They have taken off his hands and feet. But Clegane seemed amused by the way the Cahoric slumbers."
Jaime's smile curdled. "What about his brave companions?"
"The few who stayed at Harrenhal are dead. The others scattered. They'll make for ports, I'll warrant, or try and lose themselves in the woods."
His eyes went back to Jaime's stump, and his mouth grew taut with fury.
"We'll have their heads, everyone. Can you use a sword with your left hand?"
"I can hardly dress myself in the morning."
Jamie held up the hand in question for his father's inspection. Four fingers, a thumb, much like the other. Why shouldn't it work as well?
Good, his father said. That is good. I have a gift for you, for your return. After Varys told me.
Unless it's a new hand, let it wait. Jamie took the chair across from him. How did Joffrey die?
Poison. It was meant to appear as though he choked on a morsel of food, but I had his throat slit open, and the maesters could find no obstruction.
Cersei claims that Tyrion did it.
Your brother served the king the poison wine, with 1,000 people looking on.
That was rather foolish of him.
I've taken Tyrion's squire into custody. His wife's maids as well. We shall see if they have anything to tell us. Sir Adam's gold cloaks are searching for this Stark girl, and Varys has offered a reward. The king's justice will be done.
The king's justice? You would execute your own son?
He stands accused of regicide and kinslaying. If he is innocent, he has nothing to fear. First, we must needs consider the evidence for and against him.
Evidence? In this city of liars, Jamie knew what sort of evidence would be found. Renly died strangely as well, when Stannis needed him to.
Lord Renly was murdered by one of his own guards, some woman from Tarth.
That woman from Tarth is the reason I'm here. I tossed her into a cell to appease Sir Loras, but I'll believe in Renly's ghost before I believe she did him any harm. But Stannis?
It was poison that killed Joffrey, not sorcery.
Lord Tywin glanced at Jaime's stump again.
You cannot serve in the King's Guard without a sword end.
I can, he interrupted, and I will. There's precedent. I'll look in the White Book and find it if you like. Crippled or whole, a knight of the King's Guard serves for life.
Cersei ended that when she replaced Sir Barristan on grounds of age. A suitable gift to the faith will persuade the High Septon to release you from your vows. Your sister was foolish to dismiss Selmy, admittedly, but now that she has opened the gates...
Someone needs to close them again. Jamie stood. I am tired of having high-born women kicking pails of shit at me, father. No one ever asked me if I wanted to be Lord Commander of the King's Guard, but it seems I am. I have a duty.
You do? Lord Tywin rose as well. A duty to House Lannister. You are the heir to Casterly Rock. That is where you should be. Tommen should accompany you as your ward and squire. The Rock is where he'll learn to be a Lannister, and I want him away from his mother. I mean to find a new husband for Cersei. Oberyn Martell, perhaps, once I convince Lord Tyrell that the match does not threaten Highgarden. And it is past time you were wed. The Tyrells are now insisting that Margaery be wed to Tommen. But if I were to offer you instead...
No! Jamie had heard all he could stand, no, more than he could stand. He was sick of it, sick of lords and lies, sick of his father, his sister, sick of the whole bloody business. No, 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 no! How many times must I say no before you hear me? Oberyn Martell? The man's infamous. And not for just poisoning his sword. He has more bastards than Robert, and beds with boys as well. And if you think for one misbegotten moment that I would wed Joffrey's widow...
Lord Tyrell swears the girl's still maiden.
She can die a maiden as far as I'm concerned. I don't want her, and I don't want your rock.
You are my son.
I am a knight of the King's Guard, the Lord Commander of the King's Guard, and that's all I mean to be. Firelight gleamed golden in the stiff whiskers that framed Lord Tywin's face. A vein pulsed in his neck, but he did not speak, and did not speak, and did not speak. The strained silence went on until it was more than Jamie could endure. "Father," he began.
"You are not my son."
Lord Tywin turned his face away.
"You say you are the Lord Commander of the King's Guard, and only that. Very well, sir. Go, do your duty."
Sansa. When Sir Lancel Lannister told the Queen that the battle was lost, she turned her empty wine cup in her hands and said, "Tell my brother, sir." Her voice was distant, as if the news were of no great interest to her. "Your brother's likely dead." Sir Lancel's surcoat was soaked with the blood seeping out under his arm. When they had arrived in the hall, the sight of him had made some of the guests scream. "He was on the bridge of boats when it broke apart, we think. Sir Mandon's likely gone as well, and no one can find the hound. Gods be damned, Cersei, why did you have them fetch Joffrey back to the castle? The gold cloaks are throwing down their spears and running, hundreds of them. When they saw the king leaving, they lost all heart. The whole Blackwater's awash with wrecks and fire and corpses. But we could have held if—" Osney Kettleblack pushed past him. "There's fighting on both sides of the river now, Your Grace. It may be that some of Stannis' lords are fighting each other, no one's sure. It's all confused over there. The Hound's gone, no one knows where, and Sir Balin's fallen back inside the city. The riverside's theirs. They're ramming at the King's Gate again, and Sir Lancel's right. Your men are deserting the walls and killing their own officers. There's mobs at the Iron Gate and the Gate of the Guards fighting to get out, and Flea Bottom's one great drunken riot." "Gods be good," Sansa thought. "It is happening. Joffrey's lost his head, and so have I." She looked for Sir Ilion, but the King's justice was not to be seen. "I can feel him, though. He's close. I'll not escape him. He'll have my head." Strangely calm, the Queen turned to his brother, Osfrid. "Raise the drawbridge and bar the doors. No one enters or leaves Maegors without my leave." "What about them women who went to pray?" "They chose to leave my protection. Let them pray. Perhaps the guards will defend them. Where's my son?"
"The castle gatehouse. He wanted to command the crossbowmen. There's a mob howling outside, half of them gold cloaks, who came with him when we left the mud gate."
"Bring him inside Maegors now."
"No!"
Lancel was so angry he forgot to keep his voice down. Heads turned toward them as he shouted, "We'll have the mud gate all over again. Let him stay where he is. He's the king." "He's my son." Cersei Lannister rose to her feet. "You claim to be a Lannister as well, cousin. Prove it. Osfrid, why are you standing there? Now means today." Osfrid Kettleblack hurried from the hall, his brother with him. Many of the guests were rushing out as well. Some of the women were weeping, some praying. Others simply remained at the tables and called for more wine. "Cersei," Sir Lancel pleaded, "if we lose the castle, Joffrey will be killed in any case, you know that. Let him stay. I'll keep him by me, I swear."
"Get out of my way!"
Cersei slammed her open palm into his wound. Sir Lancel cried out in pain and almost fainted as the Queen swept from the room. She spared Sansa not so much as a glance. "She's forgotten me. Sir Ilion will kill me, and she won't even think about it."
"Oh, gods!"
an old woman wailed.
"We're lost. The battle's lost. She's running."
Several children were crying. They can smell the fear. Sansa found herself alone on the dais. Should she stay here, or run after the Queen and plead for her life? She never knew why she got to her feet, but she did. "Don't be afraid," she told them loudly. "The Queen has raised the drawbridge. This is the safest place in the city. There's thick walls, the moat, the spikes."
"What's happened?"
demanded a woman she knew slightly, the wife of a lesser lordling.
"What did Osney tell her? Is the king hurt? Has the city fallen? Tell us!"
Someone else shouted. One woman asked about her father, another her son. Sansa raised her hands for quiet. Joffrey's come back to the castle. He's not hurt. They're still fighting, that's all I know. They're fighting bravely. The Queen will be back soon. The last was a lie, but she had to soothe them. She noticed the fool standing under the galley. Moon Boy, make us laugh. Moon Boy did a cartwheel and vaulted on top of a table. He grabbed up four wine cups and began to juggle them. Every so often one of them would come down and smash him in the head. A few nervous laughs echoed through the hall. Sansa went to Sir Lancel and knelt beside him. His wound was bleeding afresh where the Queen had struck him. Madness, he gasped. Gods, the imp was right. Help him, Sansa commanded two of the serving men. One just looked at her and ran, flagon and all. Other servants were leaving the hall as well, but she could not help that. Together, Sansa and the serving man got the wounded knight back on his feet. Take him to Maester Franken. Lancel was one of them, yet somehow she still could not bring herself to wish him dead. I am soft and weak and stupid, just as Joffrey says. I should be killing him, not helping him. The torches had begun to burn low, and one or two had flickered out. No one troubled to replace them. Cersei did not return. Ser Dantus climbed the dais while all eyes were on the other fool.
Go back to your bedchamber, sweet Jonquil, he whispered. Lock yourself in. You'll be safer there. I'll come for you when the battle's done.
Someone will come for me, Sansa thought. But will it be you, or will it be Ser Ilyen? For a mad moment she thought of begging Dantus to defend her. He'd been a knight too, trained with a sword and sworn to defend the weak. No, he has not the courage or the skill. I would only be killing him as well. It took all the strength she had in her to walk slowly from the Queen's ballroom when she wanted so badly to run. When she reached the steps, she did run, up and around until she was breathless and dizzy. One of the guards knocked into her on the stair. A jeweled wine cup and a pair of silver candlesticks spilled out of the crimson cloak he'd wrapped them in and went clattering down the steps. He hurried after them, paying Sansa no mind, once he decided she was not going to try and take his loot. Her bedchamber was black as pitch. Sansa barred the door and fumbled through the dark to the window. When she ripped back the drapes, her breath caught in her throat. The southern sky was a swirl with glowing, shifting colours, the reflections of the great fires that burned below. Baleful green tides moved against the bellies of the clouds, and pools of orange light spread out across the heavens. The reds and yellows of common flame warred against the emeralds and jades of wildfire, each colour flaring and then fading, birthing armies of short-lived shadows to die again an instant later. Green dawns gave way to orange dusks in half a heartbeat. The air itself smelled burnt, the way a soup kettle sometimes smelled, if it was left on the fire too long and all the soup boiled away. Embers drifted through the night air like swarms of fireflies. Sansa backed away from the window, retreating towards the safety of her bed. I'll go to sleep, she told herself, and when I wake, it will be a new day, and the sky will be blue again. The fighting will be done, and someone will tell me whether I am to live or die.
Lady,
she whimpered softly, wondering if she would meet her wolf again when she was dead. Then something stirred beside her, and a hand reached out of the dark and grabbed her wrist. Sansa opened her mouth to scream, but another hand clamped down over her face, smothering her. His fingers were rough and calloused and sticky with blood.
Little bird, I knew you'd come.
The voice was a drunken rasp. Outside, a swirling lance of jade light split at the stars, filling the room with green glare. She saw him for a moment, all black and green, the blood on his face dark as tar, his eyes glowing like a dog's in the sudden glare. Then the light faded, and he was only a hulking darkness in a stained white cloak.
"If you scream, I'll kill you. Believe that."
He took his hand from her mouth. Her breath was coming ragged. The hound had a flagon of wine on her bedside table. He took a long pull.
"Don't you want to ask who's winning the battle, little bird?"
"Who?" she said, too frightened to defy him. The hound laughed.
"I only know who's lost. Me."
"He's drunker than I've ever seen him. He was sleeping in my bed. What does he want here?" "What have you lost?"
"All."
The burnt half of his face was a mask of dried blood.
"Bloody dwarf. Should have killed him years ago."
"He's dead, they say."
"Dead? Oh, bugger that. I don't want him dead."
He cast the empty flagon aside.
"I want him burned. If the gods are good, they'll burn him. But I won't be here to see. I'm going."
"Going?" She tried to wriggle free, but his grasp was iron.
"The little bird repeats whatever she hears. Going, yes."
"Where will you go?"
"Away from here. Away from the fires. Go out the iron gate, I suppose. North somewhere. Anywhere."
"You won't get out," Sansa said. "The Queen's closed up Maegor's, and the city gates are shut as well."
"Not to me. I have the white cloak, and I have this."
He patted the pommel of his sword.
"The man who tries to stop me is a dead man. Unless he's on fire."
He laughed bitterly. "Why did you come here?"
"You promised me a song, little bird. Have you forgotten?"
She didn't know what he meant. She couldn't sing for him now, here, where the sky is swirled with fire and men dying in their hundreds and their thousands. "I can't," she said. "Let me go. You're scaring me."
"Everything scares you. Look at me. Look at me."
The blood masked the worst of his scars, but his eyes were white and wide and terrifying. The burnt corner of his mouth twitched and twitched again. Sansa could smell him, a stink of sweat and sour wine and stale vomit, and over it all, the reek of blood. Blood. Blood.
"I could keep you safe," he rasped. "They're all afraid of me. No one would hurt you again, or I'd kill them."
He yanked her closer, and for a moment she thought he meant to kiss her. He was too strong to fight. She closed her eyes, wanting it to be over, but nothing happened.
"Still can't bear to look, can you?"
she heard him say. He gave her arm a hard wrench, pulling her around and shoving her down onto the bed.
"I'll have that song. Florian and Jonquil, you said."
His dagger was out, poised at her throat.
"Sing, little bird, sing for your little life."
Her throat was dry and tight with fear, and every song she had ever known had fled from her mind. "Please don't kill me," she wanted to scream. "Please don't." She could feel him twisting the point, pushing it into her throat, and she almost closed her eyes again. But then she remembered. It was not the song of Florian and Jonquil, but it was a song. Her voice sounded small and thin and tremulous in her ears. "Gentle Mother, Font of Mercy, save our sons from war, we pray. Stay the swords and stay the arrows, let them know a better day. Gentle Mother, strength of women, help our daughters through this fray. Soothe the wrath and tame the fury, teach us all a kind way." She had forgotten the other verses. When her voice trailed off, she feared he might kill her. But after a moment, the hound took the blade from her throat, never speaking.
Some instinct made her lift her hand and cup his cheek with her fingers. The room was too dark for her to see him, but she could feel the stickiness of the blood and a wetness